Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB / the CW. This week, I'm joined again by Nick Ryan King Mendoza. What's up, Nick?
Not much, man. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's. I would say it's been a while, but I honestly don't know the last time.
I think it was episode 11 Okay. And the Supergirl podcast.
So it's you've been on quite frequently, now. So it has not been a while. It's not been a while. So this week we're talking about Kinetic, the 13th episode of Smallville's first season. But, you know, you mentioned Supergirl, so we had some breaking news last week. Let's talk about it briefly. Mm-hmm. Supergirl did get a season 2, but it's moving to the CW. Thoughts?
Okay. I'm excited that it's going to be on the CW, and I'm also that I have another reason why not to be. But I'm excited because we're going to get it in the CW verse, like with.
But
the Flash.
Are we? Well, because it's another Earth, right? And this is This is my big thing about Supergirl. Are they going to do some Crisis on Infinite Earths event?
That's what I can see happening. That's why I'm kind of excited. It's like, oh, maybe they'll do that, but the whole campaign and everything like that, it's going to be interesting to see how, because I like how they do like those little weird mashups commercials that they do. And do you remember when Legends of Tomorrow was announced and they had the brawl commercial where they're all fighting like in a ring?
The promotional material
that made Arrow look so good. But I don't know. I could see them riding away, like trying to figure it out how to put it all together. And maybe Barry will finally mention that he did go visit Supergirl.
Well, this is their own fault, right? Because they should have just made it in the same universe. The Flash, okay, in DC Comics, right? The Flash has his own comic book. But right. Superman and Supergirl are not showing up every week to help him with his problems, right? It's a conceit of the medium, you know? Like, you understand that Batman's going to be doing his thing, Green Lantern's doing his thing, Wonder Woman's doing her thing, but they don't always need to show up in each other's comic books when anything happens. But look, I liked Supergirl. We all did. We gave it favorable rating in our podcast discussion about it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we're getting more of it. But at the same time, it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same. The budget's going to get cut. We all saw in that Flash episode where Barry goes back in time, we have those two flashes. That's the worst superhero special effect I've ever seen. And so, I mean, that's what you're dealing with here. Yeah. And
so one of the things with Supergirl, the costumes were great.
So, okay, like, we keep the costumes, obviously.
We can keep the costumes, but like any type of CGI, like, it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to deal with flying.
I think she's going to fly a lot less. I think we're going to see some Lois and Clark style. Let me just run and throw my cape in the air.
they handled Adam's flying pretty well in Legends of Tomorrow.
Well, Adam's like Iron Man, though. They can make him completely CGI.
Oh, true.
And, I mean, he just has that small window of a face, but you don't really have to see it very much. Like, the problem that's always been with Superman and Supergirl and characters like that is when it's a human being's face.
Right.
Okay, I mean, Spider-Man, Iron Man, these are easy characters to show CGI-ing around because you don't see, you know, their faces. I mean, if you remember Superman Returns where they tried to pull off a full CGI Superman, it looked terrible.
Yeah, it looked terrible.
And there was no reason for it. There was no reason for it.
It's a green screen.
Brandon, can you come over here and stand in front of this green screen? Thanks. It's just whenever they try to do a full-on CGI Superman, it's not going to fly. No pun intended. So I think that the special effects budget is definitely going to get slashed.
And not only that, now what concerns me now is that we had such a good, great, like, actor dynamic. And obviously CGI is not going to all be the thing that's going to be cut. I can see maybe whatever they're getting paid, it might be cut as well. Are we going to have Calista Flockhart? Like,
now,
I don't know.
Now,
like,
I have seen on Twitter where there have been reports where she is coming back for season 2.
Okay.
She wasn't, like, thrilled about it, apparently, but she agreed to come back. So, I mean, that must mean she likes the show. I mean, that would be an easy out if she wanted to leave.
There's two things about her character, too. She's probably one of the best characters on the show, and she delivers a great message. For her to just drop out because of money, I can see why she would be a bit unhappy. But she plays a really good part in not only culture, but in, like, the show as well.
I honestly don't think it would be money, Nick. I think it would be more the relocation to Vancouver.
Yes.
Because that's just a complete – I mean, it's really different when you're all, you know, big stars. They live in L.A. Mm. You drive down to the studio. You do your job and you go home. You have to relocate to Canada. It's like that's – that's not, I mean, no offense to Canada, right? but right. That's not on everybody's, especially people who live in Hollywood, that's not on their wish list to go live in Canada. And then to that point, the look of the show is going to be very different. They shot in L.A. There were a lot of location shooting. As we joked about, you see the Staples Center outside of Catco Media.
Hey, maybe they got enough clips of that. We're probably just going to get the same thing rehashed over and over again until season 20.
It might last season 20. Now it's on the CW. So this is a very interesting point here, right? So Supergirl is now, it's going to be on the CW. So of course it's going to do awesome in the ratings. This show is going to last forever. And we'll see.
I really hope you didn't jinx that, because now one of like end of season two is like, oh, Zach, you should have never said that.
Now that David Harward
I'm not sure who you're talking about.
The guy that plays Martian Manhunter.
Oh, okay.
David Haywood or Harwood. I could look it up right now, but we're in the middle of a conversation here, so I'm just gonna keep going. But he tweeted that they're moving to Vancouver. And it's going to be 22 episodes, which was interesting because there was speculation, is it going to be shorter? Like Legends of Tomorrow is, I believe, 16 episodes. It's a shorter show. So I was thinking, okay, maybe they'll do Supergirl as like a half season series, like 13 episodes or something. That way they can save on budget and then save on, you know, all the actors living up in Vancouver for so long. But it looks like it's going to be a full 22 episodes. So they can really build their network now around DC Comics, because this is the fifth DC comic show. People forget there's Flash, Arrow, Legends, this, and then iZombie is also a DC comic show. So when do you think Supergirl will air on the CW? I don't think it won't be on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and it won't be on Friday. So I assume they're going to keep it on Mondays?
Yeah, I think they're going to keep it on Mondays, because it was already doing okay on Monday for CBS.
Do you know what CW has on Mondays currently?
I do not, actually.
Have they announced their schedule yet? This is all research we should have done before the show.
Well, it was more of a last minute thing. But who knows? They do iZombie right after. Is it right after Flash?
Yeah, but iZombie is not, even though it's a DC show, it's not part of the CW-verse. It's its own thing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they would, you know, split that up. Because they can have a four-night event, right, between all four shows. You know, do like a four-parter. I mean, there's so many cross-promotion possibilities. If they find a way to combine the universes. So, you know, and that's the ironic thing. Like, CW passed on this show, you know, to begin
with. They actually passed?
Yeah.
I thought CBS wanted first.
Because they didn't want to be known as the DC Comics channel, which they've since changed their tune, I guess. So that's the irony of all this. Had CW gotten it first, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We could talk about this for this entire episode, but we're going to not do, because that's always hold on to Supergirl. That's going to come in about 5 years when Smallville's over. How long do you think the show's going to run?
If they're really thinking of having Arrow end after season five.
I see no indication of that, though. That's the problem. Although it should. If there's one show that's supposed to end after 5 years, it's Arrow.
Right.
Okay.
But if it's supposed to end in five seasons, they do need another front runner. And Flash, it's still fairly new, but if you want the dynamic, the duo dynamic, that's why we liked Flash and Arrow, because the crossovers. So Supergirl could totally be the Flash. We already saw the chemistry was great. And could you imagine Wynn and Cisco working together? Like, that would be amazing.
Well, that's why you have to combine the universes, right? Because if you don't, you can't come up with some ridiculous reason for Kara to come to Earth 1 or Barry go to Earth 3 every big sweeps week, right? It's good we're getting more Supergirl, but I hope it doesn't change so much that it's unrecognizable and then you're like, man, I wish they just would have canceled it, right? Because that would be the worst. It's like a zombified show. Well, it's like it feels familiar enough, but it's not quite the same.
What's really interesting is that this week I picked up some comics, and there is an Adventures of Supergirl comic that just started. It's issue number one. It has really great art in it, and it's based off the TV series. And there's I haven't finished reading it, but it's going to be interesting because this introduces different aliens, and maybe this is the storyline they decide to use or try to feed off of this, because it's not the same for what we saw on CBS.
Well, if the Arrow and the Flash comic books are any indication, they are not going to pay any attention to what happens in those comics. Because I have read those comic books. Usually what I do is I'll wait till they come out, like it's a collection.
As a trade.
As a trade, and I'll get those. So they, like King Shark, for example, completely ignored that whole character arc in the comic. And they tell you, these are canon. I'm like, well, clearly they're not, because you contradict them left and right. Man,
we'll see.
Tangent. But
let's talk about kinetic.
Yeah. Well, one second. I'm not done yet. I'm trying to put off talking about kinetic as long as possible.
Hey, it's a good thing we had this thing happen this week.
This was a good week for all kinds of stuff to happen. Yeah, so it sounds like the whole cast is going to come back, and we're going to get a full 22-episode order, and it's going to be Vancouver, and that's all we know right now.
Wait, the whole cast? Even Max?
To my knowledge. I mean, was he a main character? Like, or was he just a guest star?
See, he could probably be written off as a guest star.
I would be so happy if they decide, you know what, let's get rid of him. Because he's the worst. He's the worst villain. And then, you know, they have to follow up on the cliffhanger.
Right.
So.
Hey, what if it's Barry?
Okay, enough. Enough. What if there's nothing in the pod? That's what it's going to be. They're like, well. Oh, what if, you know, guys, I know we had this whole story with Superman and all that, but let's just make the pod empty. It'd be a lot cheaper if we just make it empty. Hopefully we get Dean Cain back as Cyborg Superman, because that's inevitable, right?
Yeah, I feel like I'm also scared to, like, we had all these great all these great stories that could happen from, like, the ending, but I wonder if they have to be rewritten because of budget issues. Because if they want to do Cyborg Superman, I think that'd be very difficult to pull off without a right CGI budget. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see, because we will be watching and we will be talking about Supergirl on this podcast, taking up valuable time. We're supposed to be talking about Smallville. So in our continued attempt here to put off talking about the episode at hand, we got an email from Corey Moore. We actually share the same last name. So what's up, Corey? I just want to read it because, you know, he's a loyal listener here. I want to shout out to Corey. And he says, I'm really glad I found your podcast on Smallville. Just like you, we share the same last name and both really enjoy Smallville. I like your perspective on the show, and your impersonations of characters make me laugh. I guess I do impersonations. I don't know. It's just kind of my thing. I mean, when I retell stories, I try to, you know, vocalize that I'm talking about somebody different. He says, the bug boy voice you were doing was hilarious. So I think it was like something like this. I don't know. The letter grade is something I like, too. It's fun to compare my personal grade to yours and your co-hosts. My Smallville origin goes like this. My wife was watching some WB show and saw a commercial for Smallville. The next time it aired, I tuned in. The Hourglass episode. I was hooked for life. Now, the Hourglass episode is the one where Clark and Lex we get visions of Clark and Lex's future, and Clark is in a graveyard with no end, and Lex is the president of the United States and causes the end of the world. So obviously that's a big hook, right? Corey goes on to say, I wasn't a huge Superman fan at the time. I enjoyed the movies with Christopher Reeve, and the concept of Superman was cool. But Smallville spoke to me in a way no other show has. After that, I went to the local comic book shop and started reading as much Superman as I could. And then he finishes out to say, to this day, I still watch Smallville, 2 episodes a day, Monday through Friday, while I do exercise and physical therapy for a bad back. That's 10 episodes a week. Great job, guys. Corey. Well, Corey, hope your physical therapy is going well, man. Speedy recovery. I'm not sure if that's like a short-term thing or a long-term thing, but thoughts and prayers with you, brother. 2 episodes a day. That's impressive.
That's
impressive. That is – we do one episode once a week maybe, you know. I was late on the last episode. Sorry, guys. I know there was – you know, I kept saying, okay, a couple days, and it got so late. I was like, you know what? Let's just skip this week. So I apologize for that. And, you know, next time I'll give you guys a heads up if I'm going to take a week off or something like that. Now, my plan is to continue – you know, if there's any question about the schedule, my plan is to continue straight forward without breaks until the end of the season. I'm going to take – some time off in between the seasons, because, you know, podcasting is hard work. It's fun to do. I enjoy it. I love it. I don't make money off this. People have asked and commented on this. No, I actually lose money doing this podcast. I lose money. I lose time, but I do it for the love of the game. Okay. So Smallville's my favorite show, but I need a break, you know, so we really
appreciate it, Zach, because especially this brings back memories, and this is always fun to do. It's a nice way to unwind during that, like, every week.
Well, thank you, Nick. I appreciate that. And that's why I do it. I mean, it's so awesome to connect with fellow fans or other podcasters who like Smallville as well, because we're all always holding on to Smallville. there we go. That plug for myself on the podcast. So there's no point to that because you're listening to the show. But the point is, I'm going to take probably about a month off between in the seasons. That's my plan right now. That gives me a little breather and then also time to kind of do a back catalog. I can start recording before I publish them, so I won't be late anymore.
Right.
Point being, thank you so much, Corey. Thank you for listening. Hope you're continuing to enjoy the podcast, and I'll keep those impressions up for you. That's just how I tell stories, man. So I'm glad you like them.
Thank you very much, Corey.
Thank you. So, Nick, Kinetic, right? It's our job to talk about each and every episode of Smallville.
Right.
The Young Superman show that ran from 2001-2011 on the WB/CW. Anyway, here's something that Greg Beeman, one of the directors of Smallville, had to say about this episode. He did not direct this episode, but he had this to say about it. Kinetic is where the hammer came down budgetarily. It was unfortunate because it was a really great script. I loved it when I read it. It was really dark. There was some really cool stuff. These guys were walking through walls and we were following them. There was a great scene where, in order to steal the merchandise inside the safe, one guy had to stand in the doorway and be used as a portal, and the others would throw all the stuff through to him, but the hammer came down. It had to happen, and that episode got caught in the ringer. I don't think the budget was the problem here. I hate to say it, but you can probably guess we're not the biggest fans of this episode. But hey, let's find out why and jump into it.
Are you Whitney Fordman?
Yeah.
Wade Mahaney. I saw you throw for 300 yards against Topeka last year. That was a great game, huh? Say, I heard that you were tracked for a full ride to Kansas State.
It didn't work out. Size 12, right?
Yeah. Thanks, bud.
Damn. Well, I know all about that. Senior year, I got sacked, blew out my knee, had to have 4 operations.
Tough break.
I had a dozen schools offer me full scholarships. And then it all went away. Just like that. So what's your plan now?
Don't have one. Just don't want to do this the rest of my life.
I hear you. Where's the future in that, huh? Say, we're having a party at our place tonight. Why don't you swing by?
I can't. I gotta close up.
Come by after. Knock back a brew, detox from this. Come on, man. It'll be fun. Fun!
Kinetic is the 13th episode of Smallville's first season and 13th overall. It aired on February 26th, 2002. It was written by Philip Levins and directed by Robert Singer.
Okay, first off, I didn't know the way that it started. I thought I accidentally started in the middle of the episode.
Yeah, I'm like, what? Rewind? Did this skip ahead? Because this episode starts... And you see, like, these three bros, the most bros of bros. They're, like, psyching themselves up with some loud rock music in this car, like, in the rain. And they're like, yeah, let's go. And it's like, what am I watching? And then we cut to Chloe interviewing Lex Luthor in his mansion. And Clark is there with a video camera. Why Chloe is videotaping this, I have no idea. A video camera for an interview is a little much, I think, for her, you know... presumably for the school paper.
This interview is obviously about the level. Oh, I'm blanking on the level. Level 4?
Level 3. Come on, level man. 3. Level 4. There is no level 4.
Are you sure? Well, the interview about level 3 and just recording it, and I'm thinking to myself, wait, is this for the school paper? Because I feel like this would be better for an actual paper, for the actual paper.
Well, in the last episode, she did get her first article in the Smallville Ledger. So, you know, maybe she's trying to get another byline in a legitimate newspaper. So who knows? And obviously Lex is doing them a solid because him and Clark are friends. They have a moment of like bumbling Clark there where she's like, are we ready now, Clark? He's like, oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't press record. I'm like, okay, that's random. But I was thinking to myself, why is there a video camera here? And the only reason is because they needed Clark there as well. For all this to go down. Like, if it was just Chloe... No, really, they needed Clark to have something to do. Because he doesn't need to be there. You know what I'm saying?
True.
So, true. I believe that's why they had this random video camera situation going on.
Later on, I actually thought the video camera was going to be, like, how they figured out how they got it.
You know, Nick, that would have been a great idea. That would have been
Hey, we're jumping ahead too much, so...
But anyway, Lex's bodyguard comes in. His bodyguard, Demarius, is actually his first appearance. He has a couple more appearances down the road. So this is some nice continuity. There is some continuity. It's a nice continuity between recurring characters like this. Lex's bodyguards, doctors at the Smallville Hospital, members of the Smallville Sheriff's Department, things like that. So some nice recurring actors there. He says that Lex has a phone call and he has to go take it. And Chloe's pretty skeptical. She's like, do you think he just blew us off? And I don't know. Like, I think Lex might have, actually, because he didn't really come back at any time. And it did seem rather conveniently placed that he had to go take an important call.
Right. And I kind of feel like it probably wasn't really his intention to actually go talk to his dad, but he saw it as an exit. Because it's like, oh, I have to take this call. It's like, what's the first time you actually decided to listen to your dad? You know what I mean?
That's true. That is out of character.
I felt like that was kind of more of him trying to dodge it, because knowing his relationship, he probably was like, I don't care. Just let it go to voicemail. So doing a solid by actually setting up the meeting, but finding a way to get out of it, I think that was more – he just wanted to delay it.
Right. So then we cut back outside and we see that the Dude Bros are outside 2116 Beresford Lane, which means nothing. Like, I don't know why it's the Luther Mansion, right? Apparently that's right. The address. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, was that supposed to be a reveal of some kind? Like, we don't.
Wait, it wasn't an Easter egg? Is there like the 2211 somewhere? I don't know.
Nope. The Smallville Official Companion, which whenever I get quotes and things of that nature out of, they're usually out of the Smallville Official Companion. Obviously, I'm in season one right now. It's written by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. And by that, I mean the internet. They have a little trivia bit here. It says, did you know the address of Lex's mansion is 2116 Beresford Lane?
And that's it.
Yeah. And then it also says, the Kent farm is on Hickory Lane, and the Kent's phone number is 555-0145. Like, okay, sure. Thanks for that. Helpful information. So Chloe kind of distracts Clark and sneaks out just to snoop around the mansion. And she says, it's a mansion. It's designed for snooping. So I like that. The Dude Bros come in the room. I'm going to keep calling them that. It's a really good, actually, transition here. Director Robert Singer blocked this pretty well, where we have this tracking shot of Clark following Chloe out the door she went. But he passes behind this pillar. And the camera passes behind this pillar, and they use this pillar as like an edit point for the three guys to come in, because it's a seamless cut otherwise. You know, you see Clark walk by, and then you see these guys just appear in the room after the camera goes by the pillar. So obviously that was a different setup, but I thought that was a very clever way to, you know, being creative, because they have no budget.
Actually, for me, so I didn't watch the preview for this episode. I think I'm going to stop watching the previews before the episodes, because it gives away a little bit. So I had no idea what the Freak of the Week was going to be this week. Mm-hmm. So showing those people just appear, it made me go, oh, ooh, what's going on? What are their powers? Like, kinetic. And I was just going by the name, and I still couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool. I was like, oh, I guess they have – I wonder what their power is. It's like, can they teleport? Can they go through walls? And –
they have DL's power from Heroes is what they have, but it's only temporary, and we get the cause of it later. But so they're basically in Lex's safe, which is a very nice safe, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a very, it looks like a display room at like a museum.
Yeah, I was like, is this a museum?
There's just cash and drawers. There's like nice watches. You know, hopefully they didn't swipe that Alexander the Great watch that Lex cared so much about in Shimmer. Mm-hmm.
There were some vases and everything like that.
Yeah, just random stuff. They find, more importantly though, they find this this floppy disk. And they're like, what's this? And one of the Dude Bros puts it in his pocket. You know, it's funny, you were young enough here. You remember using these in school just a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm, of course.
So, I mean, I forget when the transition was around the time we were in school. So I'm not sure when they phased them out. But, you know, we called them floppy disks. But technically, those are not the floppy disks. They're the smaller version of the original floppy disk, mm-hmm. which were like three times the size and literally floppy. Right. That's why they call them floppy disks. That's right, kids. If you ever wonder why they call the hard small disk floppy disk, that's why. So this is like the A drive, and the predecessor was the B drive. Remember that? Like,
right.
Every computer, no matter what computer you had, the A drive was that, and the B drive was that. And I guess that's why the letters A and B drive have completely disappeared. You know,
and now C drive is there, and the D drive.
Well, the C drive has always been like your hard drive, but then like everything else is like, if you plug in like an external hard drive or a Blu-ray external or whatever, it's going to be D, E, F, G. A and B are gone, so I guess those are off limits. But you know, that's why I love this show, right? All this outdated technology. so that's going to come into play later. But they go back in the room, Clark and Chloe, And, you know, the dude bros see them, so they start, you know, chasing after him. And Chloe, you know, fends for herself pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
Clark, unfortunately, is rendered helpless because these guys have kryptonite tattoos on it, as we see. You know, I remember when I first saw this, for whatever reason, my first impression was like, man, are these guys from Krypton or something? Like, I don't know why I thought that.
Wow.
I mean, this is like...
Very early in the series, middle... that was the case.
We're never going to see other Kryptonians on Smallville. That'd be ridiculous. I don't know why I thought that, but just the fact that they had kryptonite tattoos to me, I don't know. That's in my young freshman high school mind. That's the first thought that went through my head. So Clark is, you know, rendered helpless by these guys, and he's unable to save Chloe. Chloe is struggling in the hallway, and she gets thrown out the window by one of these guys, and it's pretty hardcore for Smallville. Like, she's holding on to the side, and man.
Yeah, and this was one of those moments where, like, she's hanging on, and I was thinking that, oh, okay, here comes Clark to the rescue with her super speed, and you don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
And it's a great special effect, too, of her, I mean, it's not a special effect, it's a stunt woman.
So, oh, okay.
Who falls, you know, the three stories down Luther Mansion, and it's like, wow, that's a legit effect.
And that's where all the budget went.
No more budget the rest of the episode. It's a pretty shocking cold open, pretty hardcore for Smallville. Because, I mean, it ends and Chloe is, like, on the ground. You're like, oh, my God, it's Chloe. They just kill off Chloe.
Well, since we knew how many more seasons we'd get of her, obviously it wasn't, oh, snap, what happened?
You can't kill off a female lead in one of these shows. You crazy? Moving on, we get to the opening credits and we come back. And it's quickly revealed that Chloe did not die. She's in the hospital. And this marks our third hospital visit. Yes, yep. This is number three so far in the show. You know, I liked that she was in a different room. I feel like this is before they actually had their hospital set built. Mm-hmm. So when people went to the hospital, it always was, like, different and new looking. Later on, like, especially season two onward, everyone is in the same hospital room with the same hallway outside, and it's really repetitive. And I understand the hospitals look alike, but it's so obvious they're just in the same set, and they go there so often, which is part of the reason I added this tally board. It's really obvious. But anyway, Chloe, she's you know, going to be fine, apparently.
Yeah, mild concussion. They just wanted to keep her there because
broken arm,
mild concussion. Just wanted to make sure there's no swelling. And Lex, being the guy he is, got the best doctors from Metropolis.
I should have made that a tally board category where he says we're flying to the best doctors from Metropolis.
More like favors from Lex, because I feel like,
well, no, he uses that exact terminology. I know he does in Nicodemus when Jonathan comes under the influence of the Nicodemus flower, and I'm pretty sure they do the same thing in Vortex when Lionel's in the hospital. So it's like Lex is always flying in those doctors from Metropolis. But you're right, he does a lot of favors for these guys, and he feels partly responsible because it happened at his mansion. Had they not been there, that would not have occurred. And this has been a nice time to see Chloe's dad. Just saying. He's nowhere to be found. But Lex reveals to Clark that he did not report the robbery to the police. Clark questions it, but he's like, I don't care about that, Clark. I just care about, you know, finding the guys responsible for this. He deflects with an altruistic motive. But, right. You know, being Lex Luthor, he's always has something under the surface that he's really working. And this is classic Lex, too. And it's on the surface, it's like, oh, okay, you buy it. But you know there's something else going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So Clark is frustrated by all this, and he decides to blow off some steam chopping wood by bare hands in the Kent barn.
Hey, that was really cool. That's a really cool way to chop off steam. That is a cool way to, like, break off steam, to chop it.
Blow off steam.
Blow off. Man, I'm sorry.
Make like a tree and get out of here. So Clark had the presence of mind to close the door of the barn, which is smart because people can't be seeing him chop off this wood. And it's an efficient use of his powers. Like, he wants to, you know, take his anger out on something. Why not make some firewood? Of course, he's hitting the wood so hard it's making splinters, and Jonathan says, hey, we need firewood, not splinters. But it's a nice productive way to channel his anger. You know, this is another Kent and Clark scene, and he says, yeah, I know, it's not my fault. Lex already told me, and so did Chloe's dad. So, okay.
Which we didn't meet. Okay.
We didn't see him on camera, but that's cool. At least they acknowledge the fact she has a father, which is something we don't acknowledge in later seasons, so that's great.
Budget constraints, couldn't get another actor.
No, that's probably entirely true. Like, I think, you know, to call back to our Supergirl discussion earlier, I think the DEO is going to be a lot emptier than it's been. I think you'll get, you know, Hank and Alex and Kara and that one girl with the headset. It's always at the desk. And then maybe, like, one other person walking around. But it's not going to be full, like, 15 people buzzing around like it is, because extras are expensive. So then we get our classic Nell-Lana scene, which, you know, this is your best bet to pass the Bechdel test. Have a scene between Nell and Lana because Nell is, you know, packing up things at the theater. And I guess this answers our question that Nell does own the theater. Mm-hmm. They weren't really clear on this, but she owns the theater, and she's packing things up. She tells Lana, "Look, I just want to I want to be able to send you to whatever college you want." So that's, I mean, the financial sense, it makes a lot of sense for her to sell this property, which, you know, is apparently not making any money, so that's cool. And, you know, like I said, Bechdel test pass, because two women talking about things that are not a man. So good job, Smallville.
Well, are you sure? Because then right at the end, he's like, oh, Lex bought it.
Yeah, well, that's not how it works.
Okay,
yeah,
that's okay. Just making sure.
We've done
our research about Bechdel test.
Yes, yes, we looked it up. I believe I defined it in the last episode, so go back and listen to that. But, yeah, even though they mentioned Lex Luthor, it's in the context of who bought the talent, Lex Luthor.
Okay.
It's not like, oh, can you believe Lex Luthor? Oh, my God. You know, that's that's the cliche, you know, women scenes we're talking about. So it's established that, you know, Lana really wants to keep the talent, but Nell's selling it. Like, it is what it is. It's going to happen. We cut to Clark and Pete, and they're walking around downtown, and Pete is the most worthless sidekick ever.
Man, right? Okay, yeah, I was so upset because I was so excited. Oh, snap, we get a Pete episode because Chloe's not going to be there. Cool. It's like, oh man, this is not our job. Like, what?
Yeah, so way to not insert yourself into the story, Pete. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Like, but that's the problem. Right now, Pete doesn't know Clark's secret. So if anything, he holds him back from investigating to his full capacity, right?
Right, right, true.
But they go to the Smallville Bank because Lex had mentioned this to Clark earlier. There had been a rash of robberies in Smallville, I guess, for the last 6 months or something like that. And where crooks break and enter without any trace. People can't figure out how they got in and out, except for the at Smallville. What's the Smallville Savings Loan, I guess, is the name of the bank.
Yeah.
Because like there was an alarm that went off inside the safe, and I guess, you know, the dude bros didn't know about that, so they just booked it out of there. But in their rush, one of the guys left his arm behind. So
which is really interesting because they do the scene and it shows Clark looking at the door, and there's a skeleton, and I'm thinking to myself, like, what in the world is this? And they don't actually explain what happens until later in the episode, and I didn't even realize one of the guys was missing an arm.
Yeah, but, well, they do, unless you know to look for it, I have remembered from the first time around, but one of the guys does have, like, the techie guy of the team, I guess, has a prosthetic arm. You can tell it's kind of plasticky looking and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. But, I didn't catch it. And
yeah, I guess the implication is right, as they explain later, like, they had to get out of there, like, they didn't time it right,
and it ran out.
Yeah, because, oh, he expositions it to Clark, like, at the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's what I meant. I was like, that scene made almost no sense, because it was like, okay, he sees the arm, but they never follow up on it.
Okay, well, if he ran out of phasing before they got out the door, then how did he get out in the first place?
Oh, no, I think he ran out of phasing as they're going out, and he was the last one to get out, and then that's where his arm got left behind.
And then what, they went out the front door like normal people and then walked through the wall? Because that's the interior door.
Oh, true.
That's the safe door. Anyway.
Oh, maybe somebody else. I don't know.
This episode is so bad, we don't need a nitpick. Okay, let's just move forward.
Before we move forward, though, I was just interested in, like, okay, so they said his, like, when he went through the door, the arm got cut off, and there was a nub there. So are they just trying to say that there's just an arm hanging in that door?
Yeah.
And no one noticed, like, smell or deterioration?
Well, it's a safe, right? It's like, you know, it's stainless steel. It's pretty hard stuff.
But, is there that much space?
It's only been like a week, okay? Give him a break.
Okay, I see that.
Have you ever seen a safe before? I'm taking your role of the justification.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you just turn the tables out?
Have you ever seen a safe door? It's pretty thick, all right? There's plenty of space for human armor in there. So moving on, let's move on from this. We get to see the bros, their house. And it's the most bro setup.
They're watching multiple TVs. Like, I don't understand how that works. I see this as so many. It's a lot. It's a big trope. I see this happen in a lot of things, and I'm just like, why watch so many other TVs? It's like, I don't understand.
Unless you're Ozymandias and you're like assimilating all the knowledge of the the current events, right? Yeah. So they have like multiple TVs, multiple boom boxes, right? Just loud music. Like, it's like a frat house, like, on steroids.
Okay. These dude bros, have we seen these guys before anywhere? Are they relevant? Are they actors? Have they done other things? Yeah. I'm sorry. Because I didn't recognize them at all. Except one guy just looked like Adam Driver.
Well, I was like, Adam, I don't know if he looked like Adam Driver. He looked kind of like Chad Kroeger to me from Nickelback.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, that's who I thought he looked like. Now, the main one is played by Kavan Smith. Kavan. That's right, Kavan Smith. Yep. He's in such movies as Mission to Mars, C Spot Run, and Red. werewolf hunter, you know, whatever, right? He was on quite a few episodes of Eureka, and then also on Supernatural, Stargate Atlantis, the 4400, but he was the main guy, Wade, who was like the ringleader of the Dude Bros. The other two Dude Bros, David Lovegren and David Coles, so we'll call them like the Davids.
Davids.
I honestly don't know which is which because their IMDb profiles do not have pictures, so I have no way of figuring out which one is which. But David Lovegren also appeared in Stargate SG-1, Supernatural, John Doe.
Oh, that was a great show.
That was a great show. Dominique Purcell.
Yeah, I was going to say Dominique Purcell.
Yeah, David Coles was in The Dead Zone, Dark Angel, Blade, the TV series. I'm guessing David Coles is the one missing the arm because he has the least amount of credits, and I felt like he was the worst of the three, even though they were all pretty bad. But those are the Dude Bros. They're not much to speak of, really. Kevin Smith at least has a lot of pictures on his profile, on his IMDb profile, and has been in a lot of stuff. They were very bad actors. Was it bad? Was it bad writing? I don't know.
No, I think they were good actors.
No, okay, I wouldn't go that far.
They were trying to be characters we didn't like.
Well, they were caricatures. That's what they were. There's a difference between a caricature and a caricature. The guy with the one arm is researching that disc, the floppy disc that he got out of the safe, and it turns out that Lex had hacked Lionel, basically at Luther Corp. As we find out later, when they pay Lex a visit, they explain that he had been skimming money from his dad, which seems unnecessary for Lex, and they never really went anywhere with this plot.
Do you remember why he's skimming money?
Yes, to build a particle accelerator.
Oh my gosh! I got so excited.
I know, right? I mean, that's awesome. But it's the only time it's mentioned, and I'm like, what was this particle accelerator for? The world will never know because they never follow up on this, do they? It's interesting because all these plots really could tie together if they thought it through a little better. Because a particle accelerator would, you know, accelerate your particles and kinetic energy and all that. You could go through things, right? And then Chloe is directly asking Lex about these, you know, secret project he's got going on, and he's deflecting about it. So these are all just dangling plot threads that are very interesting, but they choose not to pick up on. And you would think, and they're usually really good, especially in the first couple seasons, about Lex has this stuff going on behind the scenes. They never forget about it, but they forgot about this. And it's like, hey, a particle accelerator? Come on. Like, that is like, you can literally make a whole TV show out of that. They show up at the mansion and they're threatening Lex and they say, hey, you're going to give us $1 million or something, right?
It was $1 million. It was $1 million.
I like how they make Lex turn around when they leave so he doesn't know how they get in and out. He's like, turn around. And then as they walk out, and this is another, if I did like dialogue like this in the tally board, it would just get out of control. But they leave and he says, you have no idea who you're dealing with. I'm like, yeah, okay. It's like the third time that Lex has said that.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
So then we get our first and only look. In this episode, I believe, is the only time we see it, Fordman's, which is Whitney's dad's store. What do you think of that?
I was actually surprised. I was looking at it. I was like, is this the first time we see it? Do we actually see it again?
The first and only time, I believe.
Oh, this is where the budget went to, maybe. Like, they picked an actual store to shoot it in, because there's no way they made a set like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I give them credit for at least, like, putting up an exterior sign. You know, I mean, that's for one episode off. I'm like, oh, good for you guys. You know, Fordman's. Okay, right. And basically, this is like Academy, you know, but it's a small mom and pop version of Academy. And Whitney's dad or Whitney's family has owned the store, and Whitney's has been pick up extra shifts. And you know, there was an earlier quick scene with Lana where she's like, hey, Whitney, what's going on? I thought we were going to get together later. He's like, oh, I got to go do inventory at the store. And this is a plot they've been trying to push on us the last couple episodes with Whitney at the store. And like, where was this store the first half of the season? Clark goes in there to pick up a microwave for his mom. Like, why would you buy a microwave at Fordman's, right? That's like going to Academy to buy a microwave, right? It doesn't make any sense. I guess it's more of a general store. Maybe it's like a...
Yeah, I think it was more of a general store but they happened to be in the sports section because they had to be in that section. What I didn't understand, because they were obviously looking for Whitney, so how did they know?
I'm gonna get into this here. Absolutely, I had the same thought, Nick. So Clark is in there waiting on his microwave or whatever, and he starts talking to Whitney, and Whitney kind of reveals to him that he lost his scholarship. Because Clark's like, hey, what's going on with you, man? Because he's even more mopey than usual for Whitney. Mm-hmm. He lost his scholarship. I guess we're to assume, like, you know, he couldn't keep his grades up because taking care of his dad and all that stuff and taking care of the store. And he's lamenting the fact that he's going to be in Smallville for the rest of his life, and he's going to be a remember him, which is actually a callback to earlier I believe in the pilot, when he was talking to Lana, and he's like, look, I don't want to be another Remember Him, you know, these small town athletes who were just, you know, king of the world for a short time and then just fall off the face of the earth, and their life just it never amounts to anything after high school, you know.
And that's where I kind of see where he's saying it was a great script, because that story is actually a pretty interesting story, because he's really thinking about his future, that how he's going to be stuck in Smallville, and this is what kind of turns him to this life of crime, if you will.
Well, this 2 days of crime, yes. you know, and I would say, look, Eric Johnson, he seems like a great guy. I don't think he rose to the level of the material here. You know, I feel like
very true.
I feel like he didn't sell me. You know, this is his first episode. This is the first and only Whitney episode, and sadly, this is probably maybe one of the reasons why they're like, yeah, let's just get rid of this character, because it's not Ouch. Working. But I mean, here's what he had to say. Here's what Eric Johnson had to say. Once again, quoting the Smallville Official Companion Season 1 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. It was just a very different way of thinking about what I was doing. I had to do a particular job and be very sure of what I was doing. I had more responsibility. When you have one scene and you're in the background giving a dirty look, there's not a lot you have to put into it. But when you're the storyline, there's more. True. So, I mean, this was probably his first real opportunity to do anything anyway. He did all right, I guess, but he didn't sell me. He didn't sell me. One of the dude bros hears this conversation between Clark and Whitney, and he interrupts. He's like, hey, bro. I think he literally says, hey, bro. I should have had a bro counter. I know. Oh, I really wish I did. Man. I got about halfway through the episode, and I was like, oh, but I can't rewatch this garbage, so I have to keep going. So to your point earlier, Nick, how do these guys know? They're looking for fresh blood, right? They're looking for people who are like them. It's just as they reveal in their exposition to Whitney here, two of them are here. The two guys with both arms are here. the one guy without arm is not. Is he?
No, the guy with one arm is not.
Yeah, so he's definitely the third member of the group in order of importance.
It's funny because the fresh blood, that made me think that their fourth one died, and that's the reason why they found the arm and the thing. That's why it never made sense to me until I think from what the budget, his budget explanation, saying that there was a scene where he was holding a portal open, so they throw it. I think that was probably the opening scene, and that's how the guy loses his arm.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's absolutely probably
the, and
mean, yeah.
That's why we never actually understood that scene in the beginning. Like, yeah. Oh, we see it. But anyways.
As they reveal in their exposition here to Whitney about themselves, they were athletes who, guy blew out his knee or whatever, you know, the scholarships went away. Pretty much Booby Miles from Friday Night Lights, the movie. Okay? You guys familiar with that? So the bunch of Booby Miles hanging out here. But how do they know that he lost his scholarship? He didn't tell Lana. He literally just told Clark. They might have overheard him telling Clark, but they literally went there looking for him, right?
Right, yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, you're Foreman, right? You threw 300 yards versus blah, blah, blah. It was a great game, bro. You know?
maybe they were just looking for somebody who worked in sport. I don't know. No, it seemed like they purposely picked him because they knew he needed money, or he was also washed out like they were.
And, you know, something we didn't mention was Clark, when dude bro number two asked Whitney to help him out with some shoes, Clark notices he has this really intricate tattoo on his forearm. At first I was like, did Clark see the tattoo and he recognizes it here? And that's why he gives it a longer look? But as we find out later, that's not the case. And I guess he was far enough away from it for the kryptonite to not make him sick.
Okay, so we'll talk about that more, but there is some inconsistencies with that.
Well, I feel like it might have like burned out by that point.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? So because they have to keep putting new tattoos. Now, why the guy would put a tattoo on his forearm like that? When you're trying to keep things discreet. Now, because Clark just notices because it's a really odd, intricate tattoo. And that's the only reason he gives it like that extra couple seconds of notice there. So the guys finally, they win Whitney over to come to like, they convince him to come to like a party they're having. He's like, come on, it'll be fun. Fun! It's like that. That's why I say these guys are not good guest stars. So apparently these guys live in a late 90s dive bar. Their pad is just ridiculous. I mean, we saw some of it earlier, but they have like a bar in there. You know, they got like weird posters and neon everywhere. Dude bro number one, Wade here, right? That's his name, right? He's selling Whitney on like the whole fraternity of ex-athletes thing. And he's like, oh man, you gotta understand what it's like to be part of a team, man, and all that stuff. So what's also funny about this dive bar they apparently operate out of and live in, they have like a back room. And it's where they do the tattoos. And it's this huge, empty, warehouse-looking back room with just the one chair and, like, the light in it. I was like, this is not an efficient use of space. You know what I'm saying?
It looked cool. Don't get me wrong.
So Wade, dude bro number one, is trying to convince Whitney to get a tattoo. Initiation, bro! And then Whitney's like, oh, I'm not really about tattoos, man. That stuff's like forever. And then the other two guys come in. This is the worst dialogue in the series, I guarantee it. They say, you want to eat with the big dogs, you got to step up to the bowl. And then they start like, whoop, 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 whoop. It's like, are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
I don't know. But it's okay because it pushes the storyline. It gets pressure.
That's what pushed him over the edge. That it's like, well, you make a valid argument, sir. I will get your tattoo.
You said he's at a weird place right now. He just wants to be accepted.
So Whitney gets inked, and it's kryptonite.
Do they ever explain how they get the kryptonite meteor rock type of ink?
You know they don't.
They don't. And then the guy starts doing the tattoo, and we do see the tattoo later and how intricate it is. But if they know the tattoo is just going to give him powers, why does it have to be something cool looking?
Can it just be like a straight line?
Yeah,
like
it could be a straight line or square. Like it made no meaning of what these tattoos could look like.
Yeah. did Whitney, I guess he always had this tattoo then for the rest of his life. The rest of his short-lived life. Spoiler alert. To celebrate, the new bro in the frat here, they go out to this tunnel somewhere in Smallville. And enclosed area, their car's driving by. They're drinking, they're laughing, they're having a good time. And so they throw Whitney over the side rail, and there's an 18-wheeler coming his way. And let's all together now, Nick, let's go.
Be the truck. So when that scene happened, is like, are they? Does it just happen? Does he have to think that he has to be the truck? Or
yeah,
they
no
don't
explain
how the powers work either.
That's a very dangerous initiation process. Because whenever there's episodes, and there's episodes of Star Trek like this as well, whenever people can like go through things, you think, okay, why don't they go through like the ground or their clothes or how do they hold this bottle or whatever, right? The science of phasing through things is very tricky business.
For this, I was thinking maybe it's a self-defense mechanism, and that's the reason why it happened. But they never show how to teach Whitney to do it, or they are the ones who use the powers, and they just need somebody else with ink in order for it to last longer. So that's why they pulled him along, because you never actually see him open the doors or do anything like that. I don't know.
He phases through the truck, all right. He does beat the truck.
Well, in that case, it's probably because it was a defense mechanism.
Yeah. Right? Well, anyway, he finds out what these powers are all about, and he's a dude bro for life now. So we go back to Chloe. She's in the hospital. Clark says, "Hey, your dad called." A second mention of her dad. So okay, we're making sure that he still exists. That's good. So he's come to visit her. He brings her some flowers. She's obviously just really excited about that because she likes Clark. I love this scene between the two of them. It just shows the great chemistry that Tom Welling and Allison Mack had and why I was such a Clark shipper and was really excited about the end of season one with them getting together is he's like, I'm sorry I couldn't save you, Chloe. He's like, I do hold you responsible, Clark. I also hold you responsible for the Chicago fire. And, she starts listing all these. It's just a cute moment between the two of them.
Yeah, I like the flirting and like, it's just cute. It's like, oh man, I was really sad. And then he goes and kisses her on the forehead.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
That's adorable. And, the makeup on Chloe here is really good. She actually looks like someone who had been in a fight and been in the hospital and been, been unconscious for a while. She looks pale. She has a black eye. I mean, you see so many, it's a trope on any show where somebody's in the hospital, like, they basically just don't wear makeup. And that's like, oh my God, you look so horrible. You know what I'm saying? Like, but they put some effort into the fact that make her look like she had been seriously beat up. She's got a broken arm too. So he's telling Chloe a little bit about what's going on. She says, Clark Kent, investigative reporter. That's a fine Superman reference. I do not mind it.
And it's only one so far.
Lana's in this episode. Don't forget. So we cut back to her, the Talon, and she's doing a really, really bad pitch to Lex about why the Talon should be, because every night
transports
when
you to a magical place,
when the lights would dim and that screen would flicker, I'm like, what did you read this, Lana? I have some self-motivation book. This is BS here. Lex completely dismisses her pitch, and rightly so, because it's just, there's nothing to it. She tells Lex, like, my parents met here, and he's like, what, am I supposed to lead this to a monument to Lana Lang's memories? And I don't think we ever really get an analysis of how Lana feels about this, but later on we find out her parents aren't exactly who she thought they were. I'll leave it at that. Not to completely spoil. I'm not sure what my policy is on spoilers here. I don't know how many people are watching this for the first time or what, but there's some stuff revealed about Lana's parents in season two where it's like, oh, perhaps this would have changed your sentimental attachment to this place.
We'll save that for season two.
We will. Although, ironically, that was in an episode filmed during season one. Trivia. Moving on. I know, right? You didn't know that, did you?
I did not.
So Clark's investigation leads him back to the Fordman store, and Whitney is wearing sunglasses.
Hangover sunglasses. I knew it. As soon as I saw it, I was like, why is – at first, I was like, maybe this is a side effect of the kryptonite. And I was like, oh, wait, no. These are – oh, this is just hangover sunglasses.
Yeah, it's like I'm glad his dad isn't there to tell him, like, hey, bro, take those off, right? Look, I'm talking like them now. Same bro.
Hey, bro.
I've been broed by this episode.
I think that's the side effect for the kryptonite.
Seriously, he met these guys yesterday. He's got a tattoo already. he's like has a bad attitude. He's having hangovers. Like that escalated quickly. After this, Clark and Lana meet up at his loft and they're talking about how her meeting with Lex at the Talon, and Clark's like, well, you know, Lex likes to challenge people, consider it a challenge. And I do like that Lana understood that her pitch was bad. she was not angry at Lex for turning her down, because she was like, you know, the worst part about it is he was right. I didn't give him a good enough reason to keep the talent. So Clark challenges her to, you know, give him one. And they also talk about Whitney here.
Oh, yeah. And he started talking to her about the scholarship thing, why Whitney was feeling all down and everything.
Yeah. You know, I like how he says that, too. He's like, I don't know if I should be telling you this.
Yeah, good for him.
But I mean, he does anyway. Yeah, but at least he just said that out up front. And, you know, they have an interesting exchange here. She says, wow, to be so close to your dream and have it be taken away. And Clark's like, yeah, it must hurt like hell. So he's talking about Lana, obviously, you know, because a few episodes back, they almost got together, but they didn't. And she says, you're a good friend, Clark. So, boom, 1-2 punch to the gut, Clark. Clark does end up finding the dude bros in the yearbook, the class of 1996. I didn't even bother to do the math about that. But it's Dude Bro 1 way, and then Dude Bro 2, who is Chad Kroger or whoever. There's no mention of Dude Bro 3. We never find out how a guy with a missing arm gets mixed in with these guys. We can assume he's just another, you know.
Another Whitney, but like basically, yeah.
You know, I did make a note here. I like how the Fortress of Solitude, the loft, is being fleshed out. Like, we have, like, a couch now and a desk.
I was like, oh, I think this is the first time where you're showing the whole area.
So he goes to follow Whitney and the Dude Bros. He's just hanging outside of Fordman's and waiting for Whitney to get off work, and the Dude Bros pick him up in a car. He's standing right there, though. Did no one see that Clark was right there?
Okay. It's a small town.
It turns out tonight's the night where, from earlier, you know, the Dude Bros had threatened Lex and said, hey, you're going to pay us $1 million. Here's a phone we're going to call you on when we're ready.
It was a cute cell phone, by the way.
Yeah, very, very early 2000s. They meet him, I don't know, in some, like, meat locker somewhere. They phase through the case that Lex brought with the quote-unquote money, and there's no money in it.
I like that. That was actually a smart idea. It's like, he was just showing it all off.
Yeah, for being Dude Bros, they are smart every now and then, I guess. They start threatening Lex, and Whitney's, like, immediately like, whoa, guys. Well, hey, what's going on here? You know? They're like, shut up!
What's interesting is that Lex turned around. I thought he would, like, recognize his voice. I thought he was going to go, Whitney?
He doesn't know the quarterback, right? He doesn't know who that is. But Clark shows up. Just in time to do absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing. And that, right there was about where I was kind of confused. It's like, what is the range of the weakness for him? Because he was nowhere near the people. He opened the door, and it looked like he was hit by a wave of kryptonite.
That the door is obviously made out of lead, Nick.
Oh.
I might really have to do your justification for this episode. Come on.
No. But what I mean is just the range from him in between. Because, like, and later on in the scenes, they just phase through walls, and he's kind of in the same room, and he's not feeling anything.
Well, okay. Well, what do you think about Whitney's kind of character turn here? Because I feel like, I guess it's kind of believable because he got caught up and everything for one night, and then the next day he's like, oh, I don't know, what have I got into here? Right. And he's like, and they're kind of mad at him. It's like, look, that's what you get for just picking up this guy off the street, you know him for one day, and then you're going to take him on like this potentially lethal, like, we're going to kill this guy.
Yeah, I know. He's like, They didn't even, like, at least prep him for something else. It's like, let's do a small B&E, or, like, let's show what it's about. No, let's just bring him right into the corporate espionage type of deal. It's like, yeah, we're trying to blackmail this guy for $1 million, and it happens to be Lex Luthor, the guy who's been actually doing stuff with you and helping you because Clark.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing Clark does do when he gets here is he's like, Whitney? Whitney turns around and stops and looks at him. I guess the other guys are not concerned that these other guys know
who
he is now, right? I mean, that's because the other guy was there when he said that.
Yeah, and that's what I thought they were going to be arguing about. It's like, now they know who we are. That wasn't the argument.
that's exactly what they should have been arguing about.
And that argument is when I noticed that he looked like Adam Driver, well, the guy with blonde hair.
You think the blonde guy looks like Adam Driver with the goatee?
The goatee, just like his eyes and his nose. Yeah, I don't know.
I think he looks more like Chad Kroeger.
But now, since you mentioned him, it's like, okay, I see that more.
And this, say that hero, say it, Chad Kroeger. Love it. Nickelback.
And so after they argue, we have Lex and Clark driving back. And Lex is like, so what are you doing there? It's like, I was following Whitney, hoping to save him. And Lex says, like, you can't save the world, because if you do, you'll have a messiah complex and have a lot of enemies.
Yeah, that's a great Superman reference. I don't mind.
That was a great – I like that one.
And then Clark retorts. He says, I saved you, didn't I? That turned out all right. For now. For now. See, even in the worst episodes of Smallville, there's these nuggets, these kernels of, like, greatness. And that's a good – and, of course, this comes from Lex and Clark. But I will say, this is a conversation that should have taken place inside the car on the drive. You know? Mm. Like, what did they talk about in the car – driving back to the town, because I guess Clark said, hey, drop me off at Fordman's, because that's where I was. I don't know, right?
So, what'd you have for dinner?
They're just in silence. I mean, I understand why they had him not talk about this until they got out of the car, because it's a lot more dynamic. You can shoot it a lot more dynamically when it's like two guys standing around outside instead of like two guys sitting in a car. But I feel like the car ride would have been the appropriate time to have this discussion.
I didn't even think of that. But that's a really good insight to that.
Well, you see this all the time in TV shows and stuff, and it's just something to think about.
Hey, you're gonna ruin TV shows for me now. So why did they talk about this here?
We go back to the hospital, and Pete and Chloe and Clark are all there. Early 2000s alert. Because Chloe has
internet in here.
Yeah, Chloe has revealed that she has been doing some digging online, and Clark's like, how did you get the internet in here? And
she's like, legitimately, oh, I thought about Wi-Fi. And then he mentioned phone line. I was like, oh my gosh, this show is so old.
Pete hijacked the phone line for me. So good on you, Pete. Chloe deduces that the kryptonite tattoo, because she had mentioned to Clark earlier that, oh yeah, I do remember my attacker had this really intricate tattoo on his wrist. And that's what the light bulb went off of Clark's mind, because he had saw Dude Bro number 2 with the tattoo at Fordman's. So that was the missing piece that Clark needed to start putting all the pieces together. She theorizes that the kryptonite tattoos, I don't know, this is, and I always go back to the pyrotechnic football coach, because that's like the one that makes the least sense, but this is surpassed the pyrotechnic football coach, because you're right, where do they even get this stuff, you know?
Yeah, she's like, I've been doing some digging. First thing, these tattoos are made from kryptonite. Second thing, they're speeding up their metabolism fast enough for them to go through walls, but it's making them sick.
Well, this
they're gonna get tired, so they have to get new people. I'm like, whoa, hold on.
This sums up this episode in a lot of Smallville and one exchange. Pete says, "That's crazy." Chloe says, "But they're doing it." that's the farthest extent they go to justify it, and that's what we've come to in this episode, right? So Whitney goes to the town, and Whitney's obviously, you know, freaked out by all this. The guys have threatened him, you know, like, hey bro, rookie mistake, right, bro? And but you do it again, man, you're off the team. Or anyway, whatever. When he goes to Clark and Lana and just kind of comes clean about everything, they had also implied that after they get the money from Lex, they're gonna kill him. Clark says, okay, I'm sure I can sink back in there and get the disc, not a problem, because they want to get Lex's disc back, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. At some point it's revealed that revealed Lex reveals to them, Clark, about the disc and all that stuff. And obviously Whitney knows about it, because that's why they're there. They want to get this disc back. Clark wants to go by himself. When he's like, no, Clark, I got us into this. I have to go with you. He's like, oh my gosh, you're slowing me down, bro.
Well,
there
no,
I go.
No.
There
well,
I go. I'm saying, bro, no, make it I stop. Had, make it stop.
I had a problem with Clark saying, I can get in there and sneak out of there before anyone thing happens. Dude, you just opened the door and got knocked over from kryptonite because of the fact that you were just in proximity of these people.
That's right. He doesn't realize that it burns off. That's
yeah. To have Whitney go in there too, it was like, oh, is Whitney going to use the powers to get in? But no, it's just more because he knew the location.
Right.
Now, why Lana was dragged into this, I have no idea why.
Whitney went to Lana first, and then she called Clark, obviously.
Yeah, but he knows that Clark was already looking into it, so why didn't he just go straight to Clark? Like,
because Chris and Craig need more scenes in this episode.
Well, it did kind of show a small little dynamic for Whitney, I guess. It's like,
well, but we're trying so to show, yeah, we're trying to show Lana and Whitney's relationship. She does say earlier in this episode to Clark when they're talking about Whitney, she says, "I wish he could see himself the way I do. There's more to him than just football." It's like, you mean the way everyone sees him, like the audience and all, but so yeah, they're trying to show that support there and that they actually have a relationship going on, which we rarely get to see because he's one of these absentee boyfriends, right? Clark is always the one playing surrogate boyfriend for Lana because Whitney's off, you know, doing some tryout or at the store or whatever he's doing, right? So Whitney and Clark go to the dive bar that they return to the scene of where these dude bros live. It's a funny moment where, you know, Whitney's looking around. He's like, "Oh, I can't find the disc." And Clark's like, "Oh, well, you keep looking." And he uses X-ray vision. He sees the disc is inside, like, the air vent.
And he happens to use X-ray vision on the one thing. Like, I feel like
budget,
he didn't have
Nick,
to.
Budget, Nick.
Well, no. I feel like he could have just looked around and saw the air vent and decided to check it without having to actually use that X-ray vision.
So you're saying that's actually a poor use of budget. I see.
Yeah, because it's like you're looking at it already and you're just going to look into it. It's right. Like, I would have just walked over that, checked inside. Oh, it's not in there.
So the dude bros show up at, you know, worst, horrible timing, right? Because they find the disc and they're about to leave, Whitney and Clark, and the dude bros show up. And Clark crushes the disc so the guy can't get it back. And I'm like, can you do that to a floppy disc? I don't know, because they don't exist anymore. And I've never tried it because back in the day, that was important information.
Actually, those things are sturdy because I used to mess around with them. Like, I'd open them up and play with them. Mm-hmm. Those things are pretty hard to do. So that was definitely showing off his strength.
That was my curious. But, I was like, did he just out himself to have superpowers there? But it was a pretty badass moment, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was like, oops.
So then dude bro number one totally reverse flashes Clark, doesn't he?
Yes. And which makes no sense to me because so that means he had the power all along. And why wasn't he already weak by being sorry. Go
ahead. Well, no, he didn't have the power along. Obviously, they've tatted up because
right.
They came through the
walls. What I mean is that the way that Clark reacted in the cooler didn't match up to what he should have reacted then. He should have already felt weak as soon as the people were in the room. But now I'm just nitpicking.
Did he not? See, it's all blurring together now. But yeah, so he sticks his hand in his chest, like the reverse Flash's favorite fatality move. He basically says, like, if I keep my hand in here long enough, I can do some serious damage. I'm like, shouldn't you be like doing serious damage right now? Like, because these guys are Kitty Pryde, right? I mean, that's basically what this power is, right? You know, she can phase through things and she's still, I don't know what the term is, not solid until she chooses to be solid. So I guess the guy just has his hand in there and he's not solid yet. But
maybe he was reacting to the kryptonite. It wasn't actually feeling anything inside of him.
No, he was definitely feeling something inside of him. But Dubro number one and Dubro number two take Whitney out to, because also apparently this dive bar they live in is at a junkyard. Because there were a couple scenes earlier where they're surrounded by cars. And I couldn't really figure out, like, why are all these cars around? And it's because I live in a junkyard.
We forgot. He goes, "You're next, bro."
Yes. He leaves Clark inside with the one arm guy, and then the one arm guy kind of does his exposition about how he lost his arm and all that stuff. If they didn't have these ridiculous initiation and then discharging from the fraternity procedure, they would have gotten away with everything a lot better. Because basically, their logic here is, this is the way you joined us, bro. This is the way you're going to leave us, bro. Because they have this car that's hung up like on a cable. And basically, dude bro number one's plan is to hold Whitney under that car. And dude bro one can still phase because his kryptonite's still glowing on his arm. And he wants dude bro two to push the button and drop the car on him. That's the plan. The intricate execution. They could have just killed him, right? Straight up. But they want to. They have this stupid tradition, right? As all fraternities do. And Lex shows up to save the day. He used the Batman Returns issue taser on Dubro number three. Did you notice this? It's like the Shrek's department store taser that Catwoman has in Batman Returns. Do all tasers look like the way? I don't know. But that, to me, that looked exactly like the taser from Batman Returns. If all tasers look that way, maybe
all
I'm mistaken,
tasers.
But
I think all tasers look that way.
Well,
that's the general depiction of tasers.
My first and only exposure to tasers for several years was Batman Returns, so that's my point of reference for those. So it's interesting, you know, it's kind of cool. Lex just kind of comes around a corner and he shows off the taser. I know this is completely off the topic of this episode, but it's good for Lex to see Clark, you know, get beat up and all this stuff in this episode. It kind of keeps reinforcing the fact that, okay, I guess I was right about him in the last episode. So that wasn't, I'm sure that was nowhere near anyone's thought process on this episode, but it's nice that that theme is continuing to keep Clark out of Lex's crosshair, so to speak. Clark runs out there to where Winnie's about to get executed, and he sees, I guess he sees that dude bro number one's kryptonite tattoo has
faded
or deluminated or whatever. because I think dude bro two said, hey man, we're running out of time, like, just kill it, then just why stop all the stupid intricate things. And then, you know, Chad Kroeger here pushes the button and the car drops. We get this horrible slow motion yell from dude bro one. He's like, yeah. Whatever. Clark super speeds in, saves Whitney, and the car just crushes Dude Bro One.
Ooh, death.
Like, that's for such a ridiculous episode, that's pretty hardcore stuff in here. Chloe falling out the window, this guy being flattened.
See, I think the script might have actually been really good. They just didn't have the right people for it, and maybe the budget. It could have probably been a little bit better.
Be that as it may, Lex cleans things up with the cops. Clark apologizes for the disc, and then Lex says, I didn't come out here for that, Clark. I came because my friend was in trouble. Yeah, sounds like a pretty standard Lex Luthor justification to me. It sounds good, but it's all spin, right?
Yeah, I feel like that was definitely half-truth, because he goes on later, and he's at the car. It's like, I'll keep my secret, and I'll keep yours.
Yeah, so he has two last words with these guys. So dude bro 2 and 3 survive, and they're in the back of the police car. Mm-hmm. And Lex goes up to him, and like you said, he says, you know, I'll keep your secret, you keep mine, or whatever he says. And then he like walks off, and then he walks back, and he says, and if you don't, remember, you'll find out you're not the only one who can reach through walls, which is a nice zinger. But it's like, you know, you don't have a conversation with somebody, and you say something, and they're like, oh, I should have said this.
So I was kind of confused.
It's just like, he's like, one more thing.
I like that, because it means he knows people on the inside. But I was kind of confused. I was like, so what secret are you keeping? Like,
did they phase through walls?
They can phase through walls through using the power of kryptonite ink.
Well, yeah, because as it's revealed later, Chloe reveals to us
there's a cover-up going on.
That all that stuff is missing. So yeah. Lex took it.
But the threat is like, I am going to tell people that you can phase through walls would not be a big threat for me, because like, who's going to believe you? You know what I mean? Like, what in my case, if I was them, would make me not say those things? But then when he came back and made the threat, yeah, then I'll shut up and not say anything. But I felt like the first threat was like, what secret are they trying to keep?
Well, yeah, but perhaps so. I just thought it was funny where he's like, Lex Luthor's like, I got a better one for him.
That was basically what happened there.
Oh man, I just thought of this. I gotta tell him. So we get our tag scene with Lana and Chloe and Clark, you know, because it's a Whitney episode and he doesn't get a final scene. He's basically reduced to, Chloe says, how's Whitney, by the way? And Lana's like, he's taking it one day at a time. It's like, this is a Whitney episode. Like, they didn't really do him justice. Like, if you're gonna do a Whitney episode, do a Whitney episode. He wasn't really the focus. He was just one component. He was a big component, but he was just one component of the episode. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like had he been like the real, you know, arc of the episode been him and his struggle, maybe we would have gone along with it more. You know what I'm saying?
And I think it was also because they tried to make Clark, like, yes, I know it's the show about him, but they made him a little bit too much. He was like the main character when he doesn't really need to be the main character. Mm-hmm. In a sense, as in, yeah, Whitney's storyline could have been a lot better if it was just focused more, and it all kind of deteriorates because of the fact that everything goes back to Clark, and then we lose interest.
It's funny you say that, because the writer of this episode, Philip Levins, had this to say in the Smallville Companion. Once again, the Smallville Season 1 Companion by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold.
Are we gonna have Paul Simpson on the broadcast? Is it a podcast? Just because
we'll see. I gotta go look him up. That'd be great, Paul. We'd love to have you. Philip Levins, the author of this episode, says, at one stage we thought that since the show was called Smallville, we could have our other main characters like Whitney or Lana drive the A story. It's not necessarily a Clark show. Later on, we backed away from that. But in the first year of any show, you're finding out what the show is, and we realize that it is the Clark Kent show. It has to be about Clark. So we redirected it after that. So they really do think Whitney was the main character here. So, we mentioned here, Chloe's back to her, you know, investigative reporting self. She's all excited about uncovering the conspiracy of this, which she never will. So many loose threads. You're right. The particle accelerator. Lex gave him money from Lionel. Lex apparently took the kryptonite. I feel like in later seasons, they actually might have picked up on things like this. Probably they look back at this and say, you know what, let's not bring attention to this episode. Let's just act like it didn't happen. But a huge thing does happen in this episode, and that's the beginning of the Lex-Lana partnership for the talent. Because she pitches her big new pitch to him and talks about gentrification and, you know, old town Americana and how, you know, old towns get reinvigorated by, you know, preserving landmarks and making them new tourist attractions and not tearing them down and building parking garages. By the way, under this scene are playing Remy Zero's Perfect Memory, which I really like this song.
Yeah, I did want to comment on that. Smallville had some really good songs.
Yeah, well, and Remy Zero is the same guys that do Save Me, which is the theme song of the show and the podcast. Please don't sue us, Remy Zero.
We'd love to have you on.
You know, they broke up. Smallville ran for so long.
We would like to have one of you on.
Smallville ran for so long. Remy Zero broke up, got back together, and broke up again during the course of the series. So, but anyway, this is a great song. I really love this song. They actually play it again in the season finale. It's apparently Chloe's favorite song. And why do you think Clark requested it? Anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But this is the rare song that has two appearances on Smallville. Probably because it's from the guys that did the main theme. It's a great song. Lex is like, you know what? Sounds like a good plan. You know, let's do it. And Lana's like, really? He's like, yeah. I mean, I got to look over everything, but sounds good to me. And then he says, I think this is going to be the start of a very interesting partnership. And he walks out. And then, you know, there's this last shot of Lana, and she looks really happy. Yeah. And then it looks like something clicks in her head, and she kind of second guesses herself.
I didn't think it ended on an ominous note. It was more of just like an unsure note. Like, what did I just do type of deal? She kind of already knows about Lex. And then as soon as he said partnership, I think she didn't realize, like, oh, wait, now I'm working. But then I also made a small joke because we knew, like, what's going to happen later on. It's like partnership.
Yeah. Well, you know, even this early in the show, Nicodemus, a couple episodes down the road, she when she is speaking her mind and has all her inhibitions taken away from her, she does say, like, you went into this partnership because I asked you to. Like, she's implying that, like, he kind of likes her.
Yeah.
Which I guess might have been the case in retrospect. I don't know.
That was one of the things I did note as well, because it's like, if you think about it, he was impressed. I think he was, like, actually impressed about, like, what she did, like, all the research. And then he did ask, like, who gave the idea? And it was Clark. And when you think about it, it's like, I would be impressed too. If I shunned her away, like, because it's like, yeah, whatever, your idea sucked. And then he came back with the paperwork. And I don't know.
He also asked, who's going to manage it? She's like, oh, Nell. And it's like, okay, why do we only see Lana working? Working at the talent. This poor girl. She's 15 years old. She's going to school full time, I assume. She's a freshman. There are no off periods when you're a freshman, by the way.
Are they in the. Actually, we didn't even ask what day of the week are this. Summer?
It's funny. Talking to people are catching on to that. One of our buddies, Matt Latham, who's going to be on the next episode, Zero, he was telling me about this. He's like, yeah, I started to think about what day of the week is it? Like, when I'm watching Smallville. So we were that's catching on.
Yeah. It could have been a weekend. It could have just been summer.
Spring break. Who knows, right?
Break. It's okay.
One of these days, we really should, maybe when it's all said and done and I'm just, you know, have Smallville withdrawals because I've seen all there is to see. I'm like Alexander the Great. I've seen there's nothing left to conquer, you know? well, I'll make some kind of calendar for Smallville, like when things actually took place. That would actually be a pretty fun thing to do. So we should totally do that. Or I might say we, because I don't want to do it by myself. I want you to help me.
Well, how about we start doing that now so we don't have to do it all over again?
That's a very smart idea. Do it while it's fresh on our mind. But anyway, that's the episode.
All right, Lex. What were you doing with those guys? They were blackmailing me, Clark. I went there to make a drop. You're wondering if your father's been right about me all along, aren't you? They stole a computer disk that contains confidential information.
What was on it?
Nothing illegal, but it's not something I want in the public domain.
That's why you didn't want the police involved.
Clark, I told you I'd handle it. Question is, what were you doing there?
I was following Whitney. He's been hanging out with those guys. I wanted to help him.
This is because of Chloe? Clark, you can't save the world. All you'll end up with is a messiah complex and a lot of enemies.
I saved you, didn't I? That turned out all right.
Kinetic got a 7.8 on IMDb. which seems way too high because most of most of the season one episodes have been hovering around 8, give or take. So I was very surprised to see this got a 7.8. By comparison, Craving got a 7.5, which I would say, not to tip my hat just yet, but I would say these are the worst two episodes of season one so far. And then the Superman homepage, Neil Bailey, the reviewer there, actually gave this a 3 out of 5, which was a lot higher than I thought he would. So, Nick, I ask you, on a letter grade, what would you give it?
I want to give it a C. The episode, I feel like it could have been a good episode. But yeah, great. I wasn't going to say great. I think it could have been a better episode if the story was a little bit fleshed out more. And that describing the scene, like when they said there were budget cuts and they even described a scene that wasn't even in the episode, I think that would have actually helped explain the story a little bit in the beginning. Because for me, I was still trying to guess what happened with the door and like how did the powers work. And when you don't have an understanding of the freak of the week, it kind of just makes things a bit muddy. And there were some great Superman nods in it, but it was just lacking Whitney's part. Now, you said 3 out of 5. It was like you said it was a bit higher, but when you think about it, when you think about it, that's if you average it out, that's a 60, right? Out of 100. So I don't know. For me, I'm giving it a C because I feel like it could have been better. It wasn't terrible, as bad as I thought, but I don't think it should have gotten a higher score than Craving.
Yeah, see, I gave Craving a C. I feel like that's really salvaged by the Lex Dr. Hamilton plot in that episode. So this one, man, I don't know. I do not know. Like, I'm going to give it a hesitant C minus. And by hesitant, saying like this really could have been a D plus almost. But I'm going to give it a C minus because once again, Lex Luthor saving the day saves the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to ask myself, if this isn't a D episode, then what is?
Well, I'm also wondering, too, is it because of hindsight? Is it because we've seen better acting? Like, when we review these things, sometimes I wonder, it's like, man, I wonder what I would have given it if I saw the episode, like, right now. Mm-hmm. It was the first time it aired. Because there are some episodes of, like, Arrow that I loved, and then looking back on it, it's like, okay, wait a second. Mm-hmm. But that's completely different. I don't know. Maybe it was new for its time. I don't want to, like, but I think you're right. What does make a D episode? I don't remember that many bad episodes in the past. Like, actually, I don't actually remember this being a bad episode. But watching it again, there's so many things you can nitpick.
I'll go ahead and give it the C minus for now. For now, okay. like I'm going to change my score. It's going to get a C minus. Okay, we'll get it a C minus. But man, I'm interested to see what will force me to give something a D in the future if this got a C minus because that is barely hanging on for dear life. Well, that's like a 70. This is 74.5. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Anyway, that's how I'll rank it. Now, a couple of orders of business to attend to. We discussed the Bechdel test. This episode passed. So there you go. That's what earns you your C-, Kinetic. You passed the Bechdel test. Good job. You did it so many episodes before you had failed to do. And also, we have our third hospital visit. So we're up to number 3 now. Halfway through the first season, we're up to number 3. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how big that hospital tally is when it's all said and done. So, all right, Nick. Well, thanks for sticking with me and getting through what I have decided is Smallville's worst episode thus far. If people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Nick Ryan. That is NickRyan.
As for me personally, you can find me at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's MoreOnZach. And for the show itself, Always Hold On to Smallville. You can find us at Always Mallville on Twitter with 1 S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And if you want to send us an email, like our friend Corey, thanks again, Corey, for the email. Much appreciated. Thank you. You can reach us at alwaysmallville, again with 1 S, at gmail.com. Well, next week, we're talking about Zero. Fortunately, a much better episode. And until then, always hold on to Smallville.
Be the truck.
Be the truck. Be the truck.